and welcome to Art Vox. You're listening to Rebecca Wilson. I'm having chats with various creative people from Australia and overseas in this series of podcasts. Recently, the Mudgee Readers Festival had to be cancelled, which meant I wasn't able to meet or listen to the writers I had so been looking forward to seeing at the festival. In an effort to mark the occasion, some of those authors have agreed to do a podcast with me, and I'm really glad to get the chance to have a chat with them. Today I'm talking to writer Carly Lane, best-selling author of Australian rural fiction. Carly lives on the mid-north coast of New South Wales. She's a mum and a wife who says she's lucky enough to spend her day doing the two things she loves most, being a mum and writing stories set in beautiful rural Australia. Her best-selling novels include North Star, which was the finalist in the Australian Romance Reader Awards of 2011, Morgan's Law, Bridie's Choice, and so many more titles that you can check out on Alan and Unwin's author page for Carly. Carly's 17th novel, Take Me Home, was published in May this year and was inspired by her own recent journey through beautiful, mysterious Scotland. Welcome, Carly, and thank you very much for agreeing to do the podcast today.
Thanks for having me.
It's so great to get to chat with you. 17 novels, that is a lot of hard work. And last year was your 10th year being published with Alan and Unwin. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Did you always have your sights set on being an author? I also noticed that you did self-publish. It seems like you were doing that before you came to ANU.
Yeah, I was writing with no idea what I was writing or how I was writing. And it is really funny because when you start talking about before the internet, you sound like a dinosaur. But before the internet, there was really... It was hard to sort of learn how to do something like writing. Like I was, we moved around quite a bit. We in a lot of different places, Mount Isa and places, and I was with small children at the time. So I didn't really go and see any authors. I didn't even know if they had author talks and things at libraries, but I sort of didn't have any contact at all with any kind of authors or writing. And so I just sort of made it up as I went along, and it wasn't until early 2000s when we got the internet, and then we started, like, it was so much easier. You were able to connect with other writers and online things, and I got in touch with Romance Writers of Australia and went to a couple of conferences, and that was the sort of things that I guess taught me what I was going to, how to do it and where to direct everything. Because, I mean, you can write a book and think it's wonderful, but then you've got to work out what to do with it. So it's all this huge, big thing. And so I was sort of pretty much just doing that. And I was writing romantic suspense at the time when I first started, because that's what I loved reading, sort of stuff with a bit of a military thing, but I still wanted a bit of a story in it and a bit of a romance or something. So I just started writing my own, and then I pitched it to Harlequin at one of the conferences, and it didn't do any good. So I got into self-publishing, just became a thing. Amazon was taking off. I had a little circle of other writer friends, and they were all doing it. So I sort of started off there, and I published probably about 11 books at the time through that.
Wow. And that's a lot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I just loved it. I was in my writing frenzy at the time, writing, working, kids are all little, and I honestly got more stuff done then than I do now when I'm doing writing at home. I just sometimes look back and think, oh, my God, where did that all go? But, yeah, I was doing it. But then I sort of, the more I got into writing, the more I realised I kind of wanted, I wanted a book on a shelf, and I wanted a book that I could, you know, see in a library and stuff. So I sort of wanted to try for the publishers, and I ended up doing Friday Pitch, and I had to sort of switch what I was writing to, which was a bit of a challenge. I was writing something completely different and something that didn't really fit in a box on an Australian bookshelf. There aren't a lot of military-based books that still have a bit of romance in it. It's sort of like I've crammed a lot of different genres in, which I tend to do sometimes. So I had to write something that was going to sell, sort of thing. And that's what I had to put my mindset in, more of a business sort of look at it than a writer's look at it, which was really quite a challenge. But, you know, the whole write what you know, they keep saying this everywhere you go. So I sat down and just started with a story about a woman moving back home with her kids after a divorce. And that sort of was based on what had happened to me over the last few years, and I just took it from there. And I was just very lucky that when I was picked up, they were actually looking for rural fiction. So rural was just starting to take off, and which was great because there wasn't a great deal of Australian books out there set in Australia in small communities. So I was lucky. I sort of was at the right place at the right time, I think, with mine. But that's how I got in the Friday pitch, and, it was really lucky to get picked up.
Do you think it was important that you had that experience doing the self-publishing beforehand?
Yes and no. It did give me a bit of an idea what I was getting into, but on the same hand, you have so much freedom when you're self-published that it is really hard when you sort of give that up to a publisher. And even though, the benefits do outweigh what you're doing, it's hard to give up that that control, I guess, because when you self-publish, you get to pick what covers, what you want to do, everything. You have total control over it all, and you've got to sort of give a lot of that up, which it's not a bad thing because it can only make it better, but it was hard to get used to.
17 novels, that's a lot of writing, and you'd already published 11. So you must, when you write, you must write a lot.
Yeah, I do. I don't know how, so I'm not, although not so much at the moment when I'm supposed to be writing a lot. But, I think it came down to just finding that time. Like when you want to do something, you find a way to do it. I wish I was so good with like exercise and stuff. If I dedicated myself as much to that, I would be awesome. But, you've got to write, you've got to find a way. And even if it's 10 minutes here or 20 minutes there, I had to just do it. And I think that's the big difference. When you have to do it, you do find you're a lot more productive, I think. I write a few at a time too, which sort of, I think that helps in the whole process because then I'm not starting on a blank page when I've finished my next book. I'm starting somewhere and I can just keep that momentum rolling. And I find if I do have to start something on a blank page, I don't like that kind of pressure. So, I think it's just my process. It just helps me. I'm just continuously writing because I've got things that are started and I just keep going with them.
How is it that you manage? I could do that. How do you manage to have all these different sort of storylines going in your head at the same time?
It is sometimes interesting. You do find that, I don't know, I don't work on a planning thing. I'm not a good planner. I have tried. I've tried to be organised, but it just doesn't work. And that is one of the interesting things I sort of discovered when I started, really looking into writing. You've got people that will sit down and plan to, the full stop, everything they want to put in a book, and then there's like me who has no idea what story I'm writing as I'm writing it usually, and no idea what's going to happen at the end, and sometimes don't even know what the story's about. So I don't know, it's just an interesting, I guess it's a personality thing. Some people just need that structure and other people just have the let's see where we go sort of thing.
Yeah, it sounds like it's important to you then to have that freedom, that space where you can say, I've got a germ of an idea and we'll start that here, and then I've got something else happening over here. So you might have, two or three things happening at the same time?
Sometimes up to three, yeah.
And then you like the sense of freedom where you can just say, I'm not sure, and you might start connecting with characters and just go, I'm not sure where Bridie's going, but I like her, and so we'll just see where that goes. And then you can flitter over to another storyline and have that freedom.
Yeah. Yeah, usually when I get stuck because I've got no plan, I go to the next one. That's usually my fallback thing. I don't know what we're doing here. I'm going to put this aside now. And when I come back, I hope to God I know where we're going. But, it's just weird. I don't know how it works. It's like magic. But there are days where it's really hard, like because you have written yourself into a corner or something, those are really stressful because you then just have to go back and unpick it all, which is why I hated sewing. So, it's one of those things. I don't know. I have no structure, and yet I don't know. Sometimes I must have something because we do manage to unravel it all. But I'm sure it would be much easier if I did sit and plot and just work out what I was doing in the first place. But for me, that just takes away some of the, the creativity, I guess.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, people are unique, aren't we? We all have our own ways of connecting with the world and our own ways of connecting with creativity. So there would be a part of you, I'd imagine, that wouldn't want to question it anyway. Like it's working, why change?
Yes, Well, yes, and because I did try to change it and it didn't work. So now I have to look at myself. Don't fiddle with it. Just do it.
And you know yourself enough to say, this planning thing, that's not going to work for me. You're interested in strong female leads, which I like. So because your work is described by, we were talking before, as romance, thriller, Australian fiction, women's fiction, popular fiction. There can be connotations about what that means about the women in it. And I heard you in another interview where you were saying, I don't like the women waiting to be rescued. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it comes from being the kind of role model you want to be for your kids, I guess. And that's sort of what I try to put into all my characters. I don't want them to necessarily pick up a book, because a lot of times people who know me can see me in a lot of the books. So I don't want them to necessarily pick up something that's, you know, like, I'll just wait until this really nice guy comes and solves all my problems, because that's not going to get you anywhere in life. And I like to write real life. I like my characters to be realistic. And I think that's why a lot of readers do tend to like them, because you can put yourself in those situations and in those books. They, you know, it's a small town that people could live in, and it could also, you know, it could very well be your town. It could be a situation that happens in your town. So I like to keep them realistic. But it's just important that everybody, I mean, men and women can be the same. You can't just sit back and let someone else save you, because you're not really solving any of your problems you had to start with. So as long as my characters are working their way through, you know, the situation that whatever's happening, and they come out stronger on the other side because they've, you know, learnt something about themselves, or they've learnt how to stand up for themselves or be stronger or do something, I think that gives you a really great sense of achievement and confidence. So that's all. I just like writing characters that aren't going to wait for someone to get them out of the predicament, because that's not really real life anyway. Sort of more important in the latest book that I was writing, because it was the first time I'd done more of a women's fiction type book that wasn't supposed to be focused on the romance. It was supposed to be, you know, this young girl's journey and what she had to find out about herself. She didn't really fit into her family. She felt she was very different. She was artistic. Her family were very academic. She sort of couldn't find where she belonged or what she wanted to do. And so the book was supposed to be her journey discovering that, which was what happened. But I know a lot of my normal readers, when they were reading this one, were like, but the romance didn't happen till the very end of the book, sort of thing. It wasn't supposed to happen. Actually, there wasn't even going to be a romance, but of course one snuck in, because that's what happens with my book. But it's sort of, you know, and she got to a point where she could have chosen the path that was easier. You know, this guy's come in, she's got this new, okay, well, we could just go down that path. But her journey wasn't finished, and I felt like with that character, she needed to keep going on her journey and find it, or she'd never have that answer about who she was or what she was. She would have just taken a different road and still been wondering. So I think that's also important. Sometimes the easiest way in life isn't necessarily going to be the best way in the end.
Clearly you draw great inspiration from rural Australia, as most of your books are nestled in that world. But your most recent book is actually set in Scotland. What are the things that inspire you about the Australian bush and bush towns? Because they are great backdrops and settings for your novels. But also, why did you decide to change it up and use Scotland most recently in Take Me Home?
Yeah, I guess country towns are, again, what I know, the whole write what you know sort of thing. You can be more authentic if you're talking about something that you have experienced or you do live in day to day. And I think I love using rural Australia because it sort of becomes a character in the book itself a lot of times. The towns tend to take on, you know, these characters that make it what it is. And each little town, although there's a lot of similarities in every little country town, they've also a little bit of, you know, they're unique as well. So I do love using our little small country towns for that. But I went to Scotland mainly to research family stuff. I've got Scottish heritage on both sides of my mother and father's side. And it's always been something that fascinated me, and I always wanted to go there. I love Outlander. The book sort of was my inspiration in the background. We were watching the TV series, and my husband got into it, which was really great. And he sort of suggested one day, oh, you know, it'd be really cool to see where they actually film these things because the settings are amazing in the series. So, you know, before he'd even finished talking, I was on the computer and booking our trip, and he didn't really have much saying more. And I think he wondered what he was doing. But it was just really great. Yeah, oh, it was just perfect. And so we went over as I sort of, in the back of my mind, I thought, I want to write a book with Scotland in it. I don't know how, and I don't know how I'm going to sell that to my publishers, but, you know, somehow I want to do this. And so in the back of my mind, I was sort of just taking in everything because I didn't know what I was going to use or what I was going to do with it, but just took photos of everything and just tried to sit and absorb everything. And, yeah, when we got back, I just thought, I want to use everything that I just did. I want to put family history in there. I wanted to put the Scottish landscape as a character because it's just the most beautiful place ever. And I wanted this journey, this woman going on this little journey and trying to figure out who she was. And it just happened. And it wasn't that hard to sell it to Alan and Owen, I must say. I tried. I don't know what I said, but it must have worked. But it was great. They said, okay. And I did want to try and do a women's fiction type book. So this kind of seemed like the right book to do it in because it wasn't traditionally one of my rural fiction. It still ended up very, very rural. I can't seem to stop. Even when I set it, I ended up with a Scottish sheep farmer in it, so I don't actually know how I can escape my rural sort of background. But it was just one of those dream books that it pretty much wrote itself once I got back and once I figured out what I was going to do. It was so lovely, and it was a good chance for me to revisit everything because I had to just look at photos all day and remember where we were, and it sort of wrote itself basically. It was great.
Gorgeous landscape, the Scottish landscape, isn't it?
It is just so breathtaking, and you can't do it justice in photos is the other thing. Like, I came back and looked at it and I'm like, oh, no, this was much more like when I was there. It's very hard to capture how beautiful it really is.
I love your idea about the landscape as a character. I see it like that too. It's almost like, you know, it has its own personality and, you know, I think a lot about the energy of landscape, you know, how you can walk into a place and you just go, oh, something's not right here, like, or something's eerie here, or something just feels welcoming and beautiful. Do you get that?
Absolutely. More so than ever in Scotland, actually. Ooh. I found that was really strange because there were so many places that I just connected with that felt weird considering I'd never been there before. And it's amazing. I reckon your DNA has to have something to do with all this sort of stuff. I honestly felt like I was home, and when I left, I felt absolutely homesick when we left. It was just one of those weird things. And just knowing the background and the history of some of these places and, yeah, a lot of the battlefields and things, you could tell there was this strange sort of energy about them and things. It's, I don't know, I guess I have felt that in certain places here, but it was very, very present when we went there. I found that was the place that I felt it the most, which is, yeah, it makes a very interesting character in itself for that reason. I wasn't expecting it. I really wasn't. I didn't think much about it until it happened. And it's the only thing you can really put it down to. It was the most strangest feeling I've ever had. But, yeah, I don't know, it added to the story in that she was searching for something too and found it there, which was really good. It just sort of all fitted together lovely. But, yeah, no, I do believe there's got to be something there. I've never felt that before anywhere, and it was very, very strange but lovely.
So is the lead figure, what's the character's name?
Her name's Elle. I had to try and think then.
So is she from Australia and she's going back? Is that how?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so she's from a small town in Australia, and her family have Scottish heritage. Her gran is Scottish and came over when she was about 15 or 16. And her gran makes her promise that she takes her ashes back to Scotland to be sent home. So that was the beginning of the journey. And while she's there, that's where she sort of has to, she finds family over there that, that are very familiar and much more like her real family. She feels like she's been, you know, swapped at birth sort of thing. So it's all, yeah, it's about the journey of taking Gran home back to Scotland.
Almost like you're walking that story before you wrote it.
Mm, very much. And I wanted to include, like, a lot of the little towns and the places we stayed at and the people we met while we were there, which was really lovely. It sort of made it so much more real for me when I'm writing it because we went to those places and saw those things. So, yeah, it was lovely just to be able to put our trip into it.
Yeah, and then to have that sort of authenticity about, you know, the way they speak, the way they sound, the kind of things the locals are saying, because that that's a unique thing that's hard to replicate unless you've experienced it, I'd reckon.
It is, yeah, and very much the same as writing for the Australian sort of settings too, having that flavour come through. It's something that you need to sort of, yeah, you can't really fake it because it sounds fake unless yeah. you're there. Yeah, it was. And the added bonus for the Take Me Home was they got a Scottish narrator, which just put the whole story into a whole other realm. It was lovely. It's one thing to read it and it was great to read, oh, to write it as a book, but when I sat and listened to it being read back with that Scottish accent, it just, it was amazing. It was really lovely.
The narrator is so important in those audiobooks, and what a challenge for those voice actors. Like,
it would be hard. I really don't like reading out loud. In fact, I don't do it often. It used to amaze me that people would want to hear me read my book out loud. You know, you'd go to a library and they'd say, would you like to read, you know, a passage in your book? And I'd be like, no, who wants to read my book? yeah, I don't know. And audio had always been a strange thing. I'd never really had much to do with that till my book started coming on audio and I sort of listen to them. But, yeah, it's a different thing. It's a thing you have to get used to, I guess. It takes a little while. But I didn't realise how popular they were until I realised there's people in rural Australia that travel great distances regularly each week and they go through them, you know, and, you know, travellers. My parents do a lot of travelling and they tend to always have audiobooks on them and when there's no reception or anything else. So they have a very niche market, but it's a very important one, I think.
What do you most value about the experience of being a writer and what does it mean to you when you look at your body of work?
It's funny, and I didn't ever think, I loved writing, I loved reading, but I never really pictured myself being an author as a job. It's not one of those things that I guess people encourage you to go off and do because so few sort of make a living out of it. So it was sort of, it was never my intention to become an author, but when I was writing, that is sort of the goal that I wanted to set for myself. I wanted to have a book on a bookshelf, you know, somewhere. And then when I did that, it was just lovely that I was able to keep doing it as a job. Like, that took a lot of confidence in Alan and Unwin to keep going with me. So I feel very privileged. I still sometimes think, I'm sure they got the wrong person. I'm sure they mistook me for somebody else and they'll figure that out one day. But so far they haven't, so we're all good. But, yeah, I don't know. It still feels very surreal. I sort of don't think about it on a daily basis until you go somewhere and you see all your books on a bookshelf or somebody posts a book, you know, a bookshelf on your Facebook and then it's like, oh, wow, that is a lot of books. Or, yeah, I don't know. I try not to think about it too much because I'm already writing another couple of books ahead and it's just what I do. I just love doing it. I'm just very lucky that I'm able to keep doing it. So, yeah, I don't know. I guess I'm just very lucky that I can be an author for a job, but I don't take that for granted all the time because you've got to make sure you're writing what people want to read. So it's
it seems like to me, like from the outside looking in, that you probably wouldn't be able to function without writing. Like it plays a big part in your just who you are, regardless of whether you're being published or not. Is that right?
Yeah, and that's what it started off as anyway. Yeah, I think when you have those stories in you, you've got to get them out somehow, and whether that's by being an artist like yourself when you paint them or you you want to sit down and write them or act them or whatever. I think that's very much part of people who do that sort of stuff. It's in you and you've got to get it out somehow. So I just share them with everybody else.
Oh, I love that. And I think there's a lot of people, or, you know, who are reading your books who are very grateful that you continue to do that.
I'm grateful that they're reading.
Yeah, it's a two-way street, isn't it? I mean, it must feel good that you are connecting with people.
It does, actually, and that's the thing I love about my Facebook, my social media. Like, you can, I mean, it's supposed to be, I guess, technically your business point where people can come and learn about you. But I treat it like it's my friends, and I feel like that's what readers are. They're people that just connect with you for whatever reason, and I'm happy for them to, you know, take a glimpse into my everyday chaotic life with the guinea fowl and the horses and the kids and the everything else, because, you know, that's who I am, and I think I like to do that in my writing too. It's something that people can connect with. I don't want to be looked at something. I mean, I guess the stories themselves are based on real places and real people, so it's good for real people to be able to, you know, relate to them. So that's just, there's nothing too fancy about it. It's just who I am.
Well, that's a lovely way probably for us to finish. And it's just been so lovely to talk to you, Carly. And I wish you every success with Take Me Home and all your future books.
Thank you. Yes, thank you for having me.
Thanks, Carly.
You've been listening to Rebecca Wilson in conversation with best-selling author Carly Lane. You can find out more about Carly's work on social media. She's on Facebook and Instagram and has a website. Just look up Carly Lane. You can also find her on the Allen and Unwin webpage. The jingle at the start and end of this podcast is courtesy of freesound.org by a musician called Nigel Nix Mouth Music. Until next time, thanks for listening.